Welcome to Great Australian Lives.
For Tobin Brothers Funerals,
celebrating lives. Here's your host, Laura Turner.
Hello and welcome to another special edition of Great Australian Lives for Tobin Brothers Funerals, celebrating lives. I'm Laura Turner. Our guest tonight might just be able to convince you to skip the butcher and head straight for your local farmer's market for fresh veggies instead. He's a chef with an obsession for growing, sourcing and presenting the best tasting produce he can. He's the founder of The Pie Shop in Melbourne, creative director for all things made from gin by Four Pillars Gin, and author of books including Mr. Wilkinson's Favourite Vegetables. It is my pleasure to welcome chef and author Matt Wilkinson to Great Australian Lives. How are you, Matt?
I'm awesome, thank you.
Awesome, that's good to hear. It's good to hear that you're awesome at the moment when us Melburnians are doing it a little bit tough.
What a time to be alive.
I know.
It's a bit crazy at the moment, but I think it's a great time to reflect and take pleasure for the great things that we've got.
That's absolutely right, and that is the silver lining, isn't it? You know, being stuck at home or working from home or whatever, you know, we've ended up doing during this last 6 months, there has been good things to come out of it, hasn't there?
Obviously, there's been a lot of death is never a great thing when we come to talk about it, but I think we'll have helped resilience. I think resilience is a great word. I know personally for my family, I've got two little boys, a 9 and a 7-year-old, and my wife. It's brought us together. It's had its challenges, but also, you know, what's life without challenges? And it's just been superb to have some time with them when you wouldn't normally. It's no holiday. We can't get to the beach or can't go to the pub, especially now. But I wouldn't take my kids to the pub. But but it's great reflection, and I reckon in a decade, 2 decades' time, we'll be going, wow, can't we have another 6 months off?
Yeah, we got through that. I often think, well, you know, when everything is back to whatever normal is, I might sometimes wake up and think, oh, maybe, you know, maybe I want to stay home. Like, remember when we were forced to stay home?
those all-day pyjama moments, and you're not allowed anymore.
How have you managed? I mean, you said you've had challenges during this time. How have you managed during the pandemic?
It's more of feel fortunate about and just relaxed, and it's amazing. Well, I've got an amazing partner. My wife's pretty special, and I've got a good friendship group. So I think it's one of those things about I'm not directly, yes, business is hard and there's those things, but I'm not directly affected. We've had, you know, some death back home in England where my mum still is. There's been one death in the family. You know, at the end of the day, what's life really about? It is about, you know, family, what your home life is and what you're eating. And the simple things, rather than overcomplicating and looking and trying not to read too much news and being able to do some stuff that, you know, I haven't done for a while, like read a book, listen to some podcasts, you know, listen to a set from, you know, trying to refine my youth by listening to music. It's things that you wouldn't normally do.
Yeah, that's right. Look, it's no secret that the hospitality industry has really been one of the really hard hit industries during this time. That must be difficult for you, who's so entrenched in it, to sit back and watch.
Yeah, I think, but if I'm honest, and if everyone in hospitality is honest, there's been an underlying problem within hospitality. If we look at the two industries that are going to get hit really hard is retail and hospitality. They are changing industries where adapting and modern day things are happening. It's a bit like, I guess, if you made carts and wheels, and then all of a sudden the motor car came along, and, you know, and now then it was tires that was needed and engines, and we're going through it's that moment in time for hospitality. I'll talk about hospitality because I know it most is, and at the end of the day, hospitality is the word hospitable, and about it's unhospitable to work in hospitality. And I think we've grown where on every street corner there is another restaurant or a cafe or a bar, or we've probably exceeded what we can do, and it's unfortunate for a lot of businesses, but maybe we needed it
to shrink a little.
Yeah, and also I think, it's a time of reflection. It's not just – there's so many connections. So there's the people that's working within hospitality businesses, but it's then who you – the people that are producing stuff along the way, the knock-on effect of how the hospitality industry is going to be really, really hard. But there's just some underlying facts that hopefully in 2 years we can come out of this and be a better industry, do a better product.
What do you think we can do better when we do come out of it in that industry?
Well, I grew up in pubs. So from my mum and dad got divorced when I was 8, my old man moved into a pub of his best mates, and he actually worked for Foster's UK. So the idea of hospitality is about creating an environment for someone that can have enjoyment and giving. You know, like if you look back at what the three traditional pubs were, your inn, your tavern and your boozer, right? They were all for like different walks of life. But what they did is it brought people together. There's not money in it. And unfortunately, there's not money in everything that we do.
Yeah.
There's a lot of hard work in hospitality. And I think we just need to remember those things about coming together, having fun and offering a, you know, a beautiful experience, whether it's a cafe, a bar, a restaurant, even, you know, a fast food chain. I think we've probably got ahead of ourselves in that food element and just break it down.
Yeah. That's fair. Do you think during the pandemic, do you think our food choices have been impacted? I mean, lots of people are talking about how they're eating too much at home, and obviously people are cooking more. That's probably a good thing, isn't it?
Yeah, I think what else have you been doing? There's only so much TV. There's actually so many books you can bloody read, or like it's what else is there to do? And, you know, breakfast, lunch and dinner. And all the bits and pieces in between, I think it would be a great thing. I think it's people have started to trial things. The bread, you know, I think it was that first, as soon as the first lockdown happened in Victoria and everybody started making sourdough, you only need to look on social media and all I saw was sourdough and I'm like, unfollow.
What about banana bread? I reckon I've made 800 banana breads.
Have you?
Yeah.
Well, that's the thing. The worst thing is people start going, oh, I can make banana breads as a living. I'll just make a banana bread business.
Don't know about that.
I think it's great. Anybody cooking and eating and understanding is great. I think it's a wonderful thing.
The hard thing about it is when ingredients were disappearing off the shelves, like tinned tomatoes and, you know, some of those staples, or even yeast for the bread, those sorts of things. You couldn't make it because everyone was snaffling it up for themselves. That must have been hard for you to watch.
I think the sad thing that's coming out of that now, though, is the stories of, you know, especially vegetable growers ploughing food back in and diversifying. A lot of people diversifying to sheep. We've stored it. We've done it personally within. And it's hopefully we can just carry on going when we do slowly come out of COVID, not just, you know, the wonderful thing of saying that there's no yeast available, which is actually really quite funny because it's a natural occurring thing. Like you can do a sourdough and everyone can go on about sourdough, but it's basically just forming a yeast of something that'll rise your flour, right?
Right.
Crumpets, pikelets, you know, you can make pancakes and yeast is everywhere. You know, it's a beer, brewer's yeast, cheese.
Yeah.
It's not gone. It's not as if we've had to grow it because it is everywhere.
Yeah.
But then there's things like flour. It was like, for a while, there was no flour. And it was like, holy shit. Like, people are buying 15 kilo bags of flour. Like, and it's like, everyone goes on about the toilet paper thing. It's like, yeah, great, no worries. But flour, it's like how many people?
What are you going to do with it all?
Apartment buildings carrying like 15 kilo bags of sugar and 15 kilo bags of flour and grain.
Like they're going to be boarded up in their homes forever.
The pandemic has made a lot of fat pigeons.
Yeah. That's so true. You must have had fun though. You mentioned earlier you spent a lot more time with your kids during the pandemic. Have you guys been, you know, have you been teaching them? Or I suppose they'd be good cooks already, but has there been some cooking lessons at home?
Yeah, we try, like, every Sunday we do kind of, like, family cook-up. It's usually it's been become, like, the lazy day, Sunday. So Sunday we get up and we've been having a big English kind of, like, fry-up. And I mean, making the boys have things like haggis and gammon and black pudding. Teaching them how to just simple things like fry eggs. And then we go for – then we've been – the loveliest thing is then we've been going for a big walk. And coming back and then, you know – making the day around the dinner time, which, you know, usually when you're rush and busy, you don't have that. So it's like, you know, a celebration of breakfast, a celebration of lunch, like making beautiful soups. But the one thing is we've got a nice garden at home and I am a keen gardener. and just making them do the weeding and whilst when they get bored and having fires.
The other
in the
silver lining.
Yeah, and like just having fires, like showing the boys how to make a fire. Like they've got an axe. I went and bought them an axe each, right? Oh. So they were chopping up, you know, a 7 and a 9 year old. But I think it's those little things I loved as a kid. You know that.
Yeah.
Cub Scouts got, or going out on the land and things that they got to do, but in a backyard.
Absolutely wonderful. That's family time. This is Great Australian Lives for Tobin Brothers Funerals, celebrating lives. In these challenging times, Tobin Brothers offer a range of very practical solutions to help you plan a funeral and pay tribute to your loved one. For more information, visit tobinbrothers.com.au, and more with chef and author Matt Wilkinson in just a moment. Welcome back to Great Australian Lives for Tobin Brothers Funerals, celebrating lives. Our guest tonight is chef and author Matt Wilkinson. Now, Matt, you are the boss man, the creator of the pie shop in Brunswick East. So many people love pies. I cannot pass up a pie. Where did that come from? I mean, you're obviously a chef, but pies, that's quite specific.
Yeah, well, I've got the great body physique to have a pie shop, I guess. It was one of those things. So before it, I've been in Australia now 20 years, call myself proud Australian, Australian wife, Australian kids. And in 2010, I opened up a business called Pope Joan, which was a cafe and bar on Nicholson Street in Brunswick.
Brunchery, very well-known brunchery.
Yeah. And it was, you know, it was successful. It was for all the things of how I cook, you know, that little bit of Britishness in me, but, you know, vegetable focused and using, you know, really greatly made Australian and local Victorian products on the dishes. And then the next door was this beautiful little shop. And for 2 years, I always said I wanted it, right? And it was a glass manufacturer or something. It's only tiny. It's like 27 square meters. Mm. And anyway, the neighbor lived behind it, above it, and it came available. And I ended up making it the takeaway shop for Pope Joan. Yeah. I was up in Noosa, doing at Noose Food and Wine Festival, and I saw this sign called Hams and Bacon. And I walked in, and my wife knows me, I'm a bit crazy sometimes. I'm like, I like that sign. Wouldn't that make a great name for the shop next door to Pope Joan? As like the Hams takeaway and shop and produce store? And she's like, how much was it? I was like, not quite sure. It said 75, so it could have been 750. It could have been 175, or it could be 1,750. I'm not quite sure, baby. And she goes, why don't you go and have a look? So I walked into the shop and it was $175. So I went and bought it and called up my next door neighbor saying, I'll take the shop.
Yeah.
And it cost me more to send it back from Noosa. We just had my oldest son was 6 months, and I squashed this huge sign into the back of the car, and he was squashed right up driving down from Noosa to Brisbane. And then organised a flight. I think it cost like $550 to fly it to Melbourne.
Oh, no.
But it was the old gimpy butcher shop sign. Anyway.
Oh, cool.
So I ended up making the shop next to it, Hams and Bacon. It was really great. And then the decline, Pogram, like it started, like in business, it started to lose, not lose money, but decline its turnover. So I put all the takeaways back in to the, into Pope Joan. And I'm like, well, I've got this shop. What could I do with it? And I'm like, I love pies. It's so simple. We can make the fillings, make the pastry in Pope Joan, and then just make them in the shop and sell them. It really worked. Like there's some, you know, Australia, New Zealand, Canada, and like England, Ireland, Scotland, Wales have got a real great pie culture.
Yeah.
All I wanted to do was just try something a little bit different. So I did like a spaghetti bowl, and I wanted to name them after family members or periods of life. So there was the Alan, which is where it all started, who is he's there from Warialda, Belted Galloway, just close to Seymour, and that's where the beef I was buying it from, and he's Alan. There's also that famous, have you seen that thing on YouTube where it's Alan, Alan, Alan.
Oh, yeah, Steve, Alan, Steve, 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 Alan,
Steve,
Alan.
Steve, Alan, that one again. Nighttime, daytime, that one, it's so funny. Anyway, so there was the Steve. There was the Bruce, which was a spaghetti bolognese pie. The top was cheese, but it was actually spaghetti bolognese inside of it. And people would be like, is there really spaghetti in the pie? And I'm like, yeah. We made a cauliflower cheese one, and that was the Shazza. there was the Derek, and they were like, why the Derek? I was like, well, my mum's first like boyfriend, she went on one date with this guy called Derek, and it was it was just a plain pie. It's the most boring pie that you could have, and it's just because it was so boring. It's like, and then
I hope you didn't ever get a Derek come into the store.
Yeah, all the time. It's like, it's, let's be honest. I'm sorry if there's Derek's out there, but it's a bit of a boring name. It's no like, it's no John Travolta.
What was the most popular?
The most popular. It was funny because in the morning the Bruce, but the Alan, and it was just it was a chunky beef part. Well, it still is. It's a chunky beef. Yeah. It's 75% chunky, 25% mince, and it's made in a ossobuco way rather than a gravy beef way.
There is nothing better than a chunky beef pie. There really isn't. Oh,
pint of lager. Chunky beef pie and a pint of lager.
Yeah, that is beautiful. What would be the most unusual on the menu?
We had it on for a while. It was called the Norma, and it was a butter chicken and brown rice pie. And people used to go... But at the moment, we're selling King of the Norths, which is a pepper steak cheese pie in between like in a bread roll.
Oh.
With gravy and cheese.
In the pie?
In a pie. So it's like a pie sandwich.
Wow.
And this week, actually, what day is today? Yeah. So this week we're doing a like a mini pies in like a sub roll with cheese and like meatball sauce.
Wow.
So like a just having a laugh.
Yeah.
It's amazing how many we'll sell.
I was gonna say, and you're having a laugh, but people obviously buy them.
Yeah, and during coronavirus, the pie shop, we had one in the city, I closed that down right at the start of in March.
Yep.
And then closed it just to 2 days a week, and we just do Pie Day Friday and Saturday. Yep.
Lovely.
And it's been amazing, and I think during lockdown and the 5K radius, people have been making it as part of their walk.
Oh, that's good.
Part of their lunch. We stocked a couple of other products. And it's the community element around the pie shop has been a great thing. Really, and one of those things that makes you really happy to actually own a business during a bad time.
That's beautiful. I want to know... Where the pie, I guess we can call you the pie man, but the you grew up in South Yorkshire in the north of England. I mean, how did a young Matt, so many thousands of kilometres away from here, come to be, an iconic chef in Melbourne? Was your childhood all about growing and cooking food? Did you have dreams of pies in your eyes as a young boy?
I guess it started off growing up in the pub. My grandfather, my father, all was keen gardeners. And then at 16, I left school, and I wasn't old enough. I wanted to run a pub. I wanted to own a pub. I didn't want to be a chef. And I wasn't old enough to drink at 16, let alone own a pub. So I went to Barnsley Tech. And went enrolled in a hospitality course, but one day a week was in the kitchen, and I'm just not very good at studying. I like the other things in life, which is not studying. And my head tutor sent me to where his son was working, just on the outskirts of London, to this country house hotel, and I was just very fortunate. The first day I was supposed to go down for 2 weeks, and I never came back. I got that cooking bug. It was this electric, busy, hardworking, fun. Yeah. You went and got drunk afterwards, and at 16, I was like, "Whoa, this is
for me.
This is for me." And fortunately, I had a really amazing mentor, my first head chef, Mike Taylor, who had worked in some of the best restaurants in the world.
Yeah.
And then from there at 16, at 19, so I started there, did 2 and a bit years. From there, I moved to Edinburgh and worked for a guy, Martin Wishart. Again, really like crazy hours, like 6 days, 110-hour weeks, starting at 4 or 5 in the morning, not getting finished till 1, 2. Mm. And I learned so much, but it was such a drive. And I actually lived with his brother, Gary, and I just needed a break. So I went to France for 6 weeks. and had organized to come out to Australia. I was supposed to work for a chef called Raymond Capaldi. I then found out he was a crazy, lovely guy. I know him very, very well. But this is back in 2000. And after working 250 kilometers away from a house from a crazy Scottish person, and being English, the Scots don't like English, there's no way I'm going 25,000 kilometers to work for another crazy Scotsman. So I basically to Australia via Singapore, got here to Melbourne, and I was getting like $3.70. So I've rocked up with like over 10 grand. I was 20 and just went wild for like 4 months. Ran out of all my money. Woke up, I bought a 180B Datsun and drove it to Sydney.
Oh, wonderful. Beautiful cars.
Oh, I wish I had it now.
Yeah, I can hear it going up the highway.
And it was like, it's 20 years ago, so give me a break. But there was no rego, there was no insurance.
Oh, yeah.
It broke down in Mittagong and cost $150 to get fixed. It cost me $150 to buy it. I bought it in an Essendon nightclub.
What?
Really late, and picked it up 2 days later.
You sound like a lot of fun, Matt Wilkinson.
It was. I'd been 20. I ended up having my 21st birthday in Sydney, and I'd met a girl, came back. And in 2001, I started a restaurant called Vue du Monde.
Heard of it.
Became one of the best restaurants in Australia.
Yeah.
Worked there for 3 years, and then opened up a restaurant for a gentleman who was a dodgy hospitality owner. I got a chef's hat, which is, you know, as the hats go in the guide. And a week later, told them where to go stuff it. And then someone who I think is one of the best chefs in Australia, a gentleman called Andrew McConnell, who's got, you know, Cutler & Co., Cumulus, to name a few.
Cumulus,
I came on board as his sous chef at Circa the Prince of Wales, then took over that as head chef until 2010, and then opened up Pope, and then the Pie Shop. And then a brief spell earlier this year with the Maidus establishment, so good George's
Crofter.
Business, Crofter, which lasted about 26 days. And then the coronavirus hit. And right now I'm really enjoying working with Montalto and the Pie Shop and my work with Four Pillars.
How do you end up in gin?
Well, so Four Pillars is an amazing business, and my role is anything but gin, basically. I've always done a lot of dinners and events for Four Pillars. They did an event called Gin Pig, and we were the first people to do it.
This is
7 years ago at Pope. And when Pope was closing, Pope closed in 2018, and when it was, I had all these ideas about I wanted to stay in the industry, but I also wanted a side business. So I had this business idea and took it to one of the founders, Stuart Greger, who it was basically using gin waste to make other food stuff, plus using lots of other food waste to make stuff.
Yep.
Anyway, he turned around and goes, no, look, I don't want, not interested in your business, but I want the gin stuff. So we created a side venture of Four Pillars called Made From Gin, and I'm the creative director of it. And
I understand now.
Literally, we've come up with gin salt. We're about to launch a Bloody Shiraz gin caviar with Yarra Valley caviar, where it's salmon roe that's been macerating in Bloody Shiraz gin for 24 hours.
Wow.
I've made gin smoking pellets, again, taking the waste from gin and mixing it with kiln-dried waste wood.
All the gin drinkers out there are salivating right now listening to you. All the other ways you can have gin.
It just so happens, you know, being English, being brought up in a pub, not minding a glass or two of the old alcoholic beverage, gin and I work well together.
It sounds like they do. This is Great Australian Lives for Tobin Brothers Funerals, celebrating lives. In these challenging times, Tobin Brothers offer a range of very practical solutions to help you plan a funeral and pay tribute to your loved one. For more information, visit tobinbrothers.com.au, and more with chef and author Matt Wilkinson in just a moment.
You're listening to Great Australian Lives with Laura Turner for Tobin Brothers Funerals, celebrating lives.
Welcome back to Great Australian Lives for Tobin Brothers Funerals Celebrating Lives. Our guest tonight is chef and author Matt Wilkinson. Now, Matt, you we've talked about your kids a little bit. You've got two boys. I think you said 7 and 9, Finn and Jay. And you've been cooking with them and had them out in the garden, I'm guessing all of their lives, but certainly during the pandemic. You're a big proponent for ethical eating, and I'm guessing you're teaching your boys very much the same.
Yeah, definitely. It's a real key thing for me. Like, my grandfather was a coal miner, and from a very young age, he taught to respect everything and about growing. And the things I'm trying to instill in the boys is understanding how things are grown and have a respect for those things. And also when we are consuming, there is death that surrounds meat and fish. And just trying to be a better person and with understanding, you can then make some good decisions. Like, they eat tongue. At the end of the day, we kill thousands of cows a day. Right, and we do thousands, hundreds of thousands.
Yeah. And they are the worst for emissions, the beef, aren't they? They're the worst.
The sustainability element and things, but there's a tongue in every cow. So let's say there's 5,000 cows killed a day. That means there's 5,000 tongues. Simple things like that. And when it comes to growing, that if we spray everything, there's a lot of things that we don't know in health of why. Why cancer? So, right? So, yeah. If we just look after things that we know aren't harmful, and this is in our own garden at home, and how I try to then purchase through at home when I'm buying stuff and in the restaurants and the businesses, underneath the soil, it's fun. There's lots of microbes, there's lots of worms. As a kid, you watch any kid with soil, they are so fascinated. They dig it up, they pull out the worms, even eat, right? Kids eat dirt. Right?
Yeah. Yep.
Until an adult goes, don't do that. But no one can ever explain why.
They
go, because it's dirty. well done, Sherlock. Of course it's dirty because it's called dirt. It doesn't mean it's bad for them, right?
Yeah.
Like, it actually doesn't. So if you understand and you create a good amount of soil, good things will grow from it.
Yeah.
And for me, it's not about being sustainable. It's about taste. Surely we want carrots to taste like carrots. So
yeah.
The boys, when I was down at Montalto, we picked some carrots. I took them back and they were like, oh, they smell earthy, and they bite into it. And they were like excited about the natural sweetness and sugars and the flavor of a carrot, which to me is like, hopefully you can understand, like I get excited by those thought processes that flavor has to be number one. So whether you're a professional or a home cook, if you are thinking flavor first, you generally... practices of growing are more natural.
Yeah. Tell me, we have a veggie garden that only grows tomatoes, but they taste awful. They've got no flavour and they're sort of all like floury or powdery or something. What am I doing wrong?
So I'm a gardener, but not a great gardener. Lots of main things going.
Milk you for information.
If you think about soil and you think about then our bodies, right? If we don't add water to our bodies or we don't feed our bodies, we go a little bit, imagine being hungover, right? Especially tomatoes, because it's really, really hot. Imagine being at the beach all day. You come home and have, you know, a few glasses of vino, a Four Pillars gin, of course, and a beer.
So you're shriveling up, basically.
Shriveling up, right? If you don't add water into your body and sustenance through food, you're not quite right. It's the same for plants. It's a living organism.
They need to be fed.
Well, they need to have the right amount of water and consistent water and to be fed through a tomato nutrient. It's got to be consistent water. It's the one thing that I used to get wrong all the time.
Yeah.
If you can say consistently water it, and not buy a watering can, but put a watering timer system in.
Yeah.
Just 5 minutes in the morning, 5 minutes at night.
Yeah,
that'll help. But then there's also then other things like disease and certain tomato varieties that work well and don't work well. Yeah. For me, I was fine. If you want to grow a tomato and really and enjoy it, just grow the tomato, the little cherry tomato ones.
That's what these are, Matt. I'm still failing. But in fairness to me, we inherited this veggie garden when we moved in here, so it's sort of just a joke. We haven't really paid much attention to it. The kids just like to squash them. But anyway, I'm going to try harder. I'll water them more, that's for sure. Now, Matt, I want to talk about 2014. Back then, you ruffled a few feathers when you commented on others in the food industry. You said they're lazy and ignorant. Sounds like me as a vegetable garden grower, actually. And they're not knowledgeable of where their food comes from. Do you think they've gotten any better?
So I'll put this into context because this got me a lot of hate mail. and it didn't make me many friends in an industry that.
Oh, well.
But that's so my comment was that most chefs are lazy and ignorant to where their food comes from.
Ah, not as a general personality trait.
It got grasped in the paper that Chef Matt Wilkins called all chefs lazy and ignorant. I didn't say that. Chefs inherently aren't lazy human beings. They work very, very hard. They work long hours. Not necessarily hard. There is a difference. My thing about the food was going, you get trained in a way. Chefs in a restaurant, it's not that much natural cooking. Really, most restaurants that you're going to or cafes are just preheating. The preparation is done because it's feeding so many. Then you just reheat. Yeah. You do the service end of the night time, and then you call up and leave a message on a answer machine service, or you send an email or a text now. For me, true things and true communities, and I'm talking about community of food, is when you're a chef to a producer or a farmer. Yes, there's then generally, you know, the veg guy and the meat guy in the middle of the way, but if you're not talking to them on a daily, you don't know what's going on.
Yeah.
And it's also that many chefs don't know how things are grown or the seasonality around it. And that's the thing about me saying that they're lazy and ignorant, because it just does take that little bit more to create conversation and talking, because chefs is really good at cooking, right? They're good at organizational and they work hard, but they don't know how things are grown and when they're grown well. And that's how partnerships and food should be, and that's how life should be. I'm not saying it's for everyone, but it is, and it's a harder way because it's, you know, you've always got to be on top of it. But it's how I like to run my life. And the ignorant part was, out the back of Pope Joan, we used to have this little garden, right? And if you knew anything about gardening or parsley, let's just say parsley, I could not grow enough parsley in that little space for Pope Joan. That people come in and go, oh, you get all your veggies from here. I'm like, no, you.
It'd run out in a day.
Yeah, I'm like, I come from like quite a special area. It's not, you know, we're not that bright, right? But I use my eyes to see how much things we grow. And then I have chefs come up and go, oh, what's that? I'm like, that's a potato plant. And they're like, oh, right. And I had one chef, who's a very famous chef, go, What's that tree dead for? I'm like, it's the middle of winter. It's an apple tree. It's a deciduous tree. Like, it doesn't formulate things all the time. Like, there was a chef in Queensland who was going, oh, we're in Queensland. There's no seasonality. I'm like, well, there's not mangoes on the tree all year round, is there? Like, your Mundi, that's very famous for its strawberries, they plough them in. Like, that field's empty. It's just we have become, all of us, including myself, like, we used to just having access to food there and then, and without thinking about it, and then self-teaching ourselves about the things that we don't know. Like, there's so much information out there at the moment in everything that we do. It's so hard, but the fundamentals of what we then put in our bodies, we're distancing from. And that's the Stephanie Alexander programs that's here, that bringing stuff back into schools at all levels. And programs, I think hopefully that coming out of where we're at through COVID, there's some initiatives that we can get back.
Yeah, I was just about to say that, to learn a little bit more about where things come from and our surroundings. This is Great Australian Lives for Tobin Brothers Funerals, celebrating lives. And in these challenging times, Tobin Brothers offer a range of very practical solutions to help you plan a funeral and pay tribute to your loved one. For more information, visit tobinbrothers.com.au. And more with Matt Wilkinson in just a sec. Welcome back to Great Australian Lives for Tobin Brothers Funerals Celebrating Lives. Our guest tonight is chef and author Matt Wilkinson. We've had a great chat so far. Matt, but we haven't mentioned your other passion, and that is writing books. You've had some really great sellers. You've had Mr. Wilkinson's Favourite Vegetables, Mr. Wilkinson's Simply Dressed Salads, Mr. and Mrs. Wilkinson's How It Is at Home. Now, yeah. I want to know, first of all, Matt, you don't seem like a Mr. Wilkinson to me. Is that because you're a laugh? You're great. You're so much fun. Is that a bit of a joke in itself that you're being called Mr. Wilkinson?
Well, it's more of the thing of going, you know, people talk, I'm not smart enough in the writing world. I've got some great editors, but it's also just the idea of when you're reading the book, you're thinking about someone else. So I can pick it up and I think about my grandfather. He had the knowledge of growing.
Yeah.
So the first book, which is where it really all started off, was where I was culinary in my career. I think I'd been cooking 15 years and I didn't know everything. I didn't know anything at all. But I was trying to explain it through food and through circumstances of how I came to being there. And the idea of Mr. Wilkinson's Favorite Vegetables was, I got some favorite, but I had to put in capsicums. I hate capsicums.
Do you?
Anything that, you know, they're just not right, especially when you eat them raw. It's just weird, right?
It's not. I like a capsicum. I like that crunch.
See, everybody loves them. And growing up in that classic salad where it was iceberg and
iceberg.
Know, tomato, cucumber, grated carrot, capsicum, and mustard cress, right? And every pub. And every place you went during that late 80s, 90s had it.
That was shocking salads.
It was a shocking salad, which led me into writing a book about Mr. Wilkinson's salads. My version of the thought process of a salad there's not one lettuce leaf called salad. Salads are a composition of dishes. It's the greatest leftovers. You know, you just throw it all together, it's cold. To me, that's a salad.
Yeah.
And they're the two things. Like, I love being vegetable focused. I do eat lots of meat and seafood, but I eat seasonally. So the best way to look about eating is then to truly look at what's growing around you. And there's no better way than vegetables. Mm. So vegetables and salads. And then the last one was co-written with my wife about, this is the things that we eat at home. You know, the fun things, everyday things, and some things that are a little bit different. And all I was trying to do in all three books is tell a little bit of story about how I come to find it, and hopefully you could find enjoyment in food like I do, in both eating, cooking, and growing. There's a few things in there how I like to have a little tipple and some, you know, homemade cordials and stuff.
Beautiful.
But also just saying that, just don't take it, you know, we throw ourselves, it's like the bread making during coronavirus. Everyone's like, oh, it's not working. It's all right if it doesn't work, you know. There's nothing wrong with the takeaway here and there or things, but it's about trying to have an enjoyment in life. And hopefully I can get book number 4 up and going.
Yep.
I was going to do it during the lockdown, but it's like other things got in the way.
Fair enough. If you've been listening tonight and I'm talking to the audience, if you've been listening and you want to get a hold of Matt's books or to order his very delicious range of gourmet delights, you can head to the mrwilkinsons.com.au or find them on the usual social media channels. You're all over Instagram. So anyone listening tonight who's gotten hungry or wants to have a read from this conversation, then that's where you'll find Matt. Matt, you have been an absolute pleasure to have on the show. Thank you.
Thank you for having me.
And if you've enjoyed our chat with Matt Wilkinson tonight, you'd like to share it with a friend, subscribe to the Great Australian Lives podcast. And this is Great Australian Lives for Tobin Brothers Funerals, Celebrating Lives. Join me the same time next week when we celebrate another great Australian life.
You're listening to Great Australian Lives with Laura Turner for Tobin Brothers Funerals, Celebrating Lives.